consider what the implications of consultation are. And the implications of consultation is that the court if they are of the view that approaches may not have been had sufficient consultation. And it's always very difficult to decide what is sufficient consultation. But the court should say that we have to go through the process. And the onus then lies on the municipality who actually bring the name change to, in fact, embark. I think we'll be guided by the committee, but perhaps the issue of public hearings might be the way to go in this regard. But I think the department is going basically of the view that we should consult as widely and as extensively as possible and as to a broad constituency in order to be fair and transparent about the whole process.
Well, hello, I
was
trying to say
I think that is correct. The handbook or guidelines document emerges from the best practices that are outlined by the United Nations Committee on Geographical Names. And actually, the court had said that when we look at the handbook and the guidelines, what is the legislative impact or the legal impact of it? And the department is of the view that the guidelines should then be converted into proper regulations, which would have binding effect. Whilst the guidelines are guidelines, it may be adopted and it may not be adopted, but if it has the force of regulations, then that would be a prudent step to ensure compliance.
Yeah, I'd like to welcome
all of
the founders, all of the title, all of the things. You are not, I don't know how to say your name, cannot be related.
the second matter then deals with the cabinet decision to establish language units in various cabinet departments and TISA, which is our telephone interpreting service. And then we will deal with the issues of human languages and technology. And this meeting is going to be handled by Dr. Zhou Hui from the languages. But I thought that perhaps if it is acceptable to the honorable member, that we will just let him go through all the components of the briefing, and then we can take questions on the language.
How long would that be of our age?
Alright, perhaps then.
I was expecting the first item to be a bit longer, 44 seconds. And then I want to also say to members that they should be having, they say they will be coming for the detailed comprehensive report. So this one is just suggesting, so they will come for the second. They are still in the process of reviewing and giving us the process where the department issues more. So the first item, they will be coming to us to give us the detailed report. Then, okay, you can go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So we will do this in two parts. Then the presentation of the children.
Thank you, Chair. The first presentation is about the government's decision to establish the language unit. I just want to say that for a very long time in the National Language Service, we have been lamenting the lack of legislation. That was our greatest nightmare, because much as we do have the policy, national language policy framework, we all know that that national language policy framework could not be fully implemented without the legislation. However, I just want to say today we are extremely grateful to Cabinet for having taken a decision that is going to make us implement that national language policy framework. We have been in contact with language stakeholders all over the country about the implementation of the national language policy framework. But as I have said, it has always been very difficult to convince them. That is why then I'm saying today we are happy that the cabinet has actually made that work very easy for us. To start with, on the introduction, which I think is not really important for me to waste time talking to that one. Just want to say that we call this a capacity building. The whole presentation, you know, it must not confuse us why we call it a capacity building when in actual fact it is recommended as a decision of cabinet to establish the language unit. We know that by establishing that those language units, basically we are saying that there should be capacity, you know, in all cabinet departments, provincial, national, and so on. And this has been a very, very serious pressure, you know, for us to want to implement this national language plan. Because without those language units, we have been taking the greatest strain in the Department of Arts and Culture. Like, for example, we have the responsibility to do the translation of all official documents, you know, for all government departments that do not have the language units of their own. So we are saying then that capacity building in the form of established language units is necessary for language infrastructure. Because basically when we say that the languages have been made official, that means that those languages should be used anyway. And without that infrastructure and without that capacity, that is not going to happen. And so we say then on the next what's called slide talking about the milestones, say that the national language policy framework that has referred to, which are saying that it was difficult to implement that legislation, was approved by Parliament in 2003. And the DAC's emphasis was on language legislation, which also has referred. And unfortunately, that has not yet happened. But also, there was an implementation plan that had to go along with that national language policy framework, which was drafted and adopted by UNMEP and the technical committee. And a national consultative conference was held in 2003, where it was resolved that the SA language bill it must be endorsed as the legislative framework for the implementation of multilingualism. But up until now, that has not happened, and now on the next slide we are talking about postponing the SA language bill. That has not happened because of the reasons that I have already alluded to. And after further consultation with government Glasgow, as well as with the minister, it became clear that maybe we should put emphasis on the building capacity that I have just referred to, rather than to rush on to promulgating the language here. And the reason for that being that if, like, you know, there isn't enough consultation on the language bill, we may be, you know, we may find ourselves having to face, you know, unnecessary litigation maybe in the future. So it became necessary that this will be a better route, you know, to take for the time being to build the capacity. And as I've already said, recently Cabinet has approved the full implementation of the National Language Policy Framework. That's what I expressed in our great statement. And in essence, what that means is that government departments must, as a matter of fact, establish languages. And this is the goal that we have been trying to get to all along. And as I said, that has not been happening. But we believe very strongly that with this cabinet decision, you know, with the government departments must establish their language units, then that is going to happen. And again, while talking about the government departments having to establish the language unit, I want to mention that a language unit will ensure the sustained use of the official language, something which has not been happening fully. And at some point in time, it was suggested again that we should, instead of focusing on legislation, try to explore some other means, preferably the non-legislative measure of enforcing the national language policy framework. And we were not literally waiting for cabinet to pronounce on this, to say that government departments must establish the language unit. We did take that decision because it came some time last year. And we explored possibilities such as working on communication strategy, which was aimed at raising awareness, language awareness. And that communication strategy has been approved and is ready for implementation. And that, coupled with the cabinet decision, it says language units must be established, and then we believe that the whole issue of having this language units in other government departments is going to be strategic. The next slide talks about other imperatives for capacity building. And we say the establishment of a South African language constitutional council, the development of languages with those goals, that is to enhance economic value of South African languages, public teaching, learning materials in official languages, offer language bursaries and so on, and accelerating of development of human language technologies. All those are the things that we hope can be achieved as soon as we have these infrastructures in place. And then the next slide talks to an international language policy framework requirement. That is just a matter of, like, don't say for the benefit of other colleagues, but just maybe to sort of remind ourselves what is the requirement of this national language policy framework that I've referred to several times all about. It says translation of government documents into all 11 official languages. Again, that's a note that I alluded to, saying that the Department of Arts and Culture has been, you know, taking that train of having to do all this for other government departments. And where this is not possible, that is, if not all 11, then 6 languages to be used as follows. Of course, I'm sure we are familiar with that kind of scheme there, where we say children as a standalone and Chitonga, English and Afrikaans, and then we always say at least one language from the Wuni group on a rotational basis. In other words, if it is Xhosa, then can be Zulu, and then Siswati, Sindebele, etc. And the same applies to the other groups. Those are just lumped together, the two group languages. We're talking about CPD, and we're talking about Xhosa, and we're talking about Siswana. So those are the requirements, and we can all appreciate the fact that those requirements are not easy to attain if, you know, these infrastructures are not in place. And again, the approval of the National Language Policy Framework was done along with the implementation plan, which also was approved. And the implementation plan was saying that, you know, this should be phased incrementally, you know, a phased-in approach, so to speak. And there were 10 departments that were identified as the key departments. They are here on the next slide. And we're saying all departments and provinces must be encouraged to establish their own language units, and there must be a difference in publications, most who are here in African languages. You know, so to change the status quo of having to, you know, have them in self-made in English and so on. But the departments that I'm saying were identified, you know, are those that appear on the next slide. And those are Home Affairs, Justice and Constitutional Development, Social Development, Health, State and Authority, Correctional Services, Education, Housing, Provincial and Local Government, Land Affairs. But again, here I must make mention and say we are very thankful to some of the government, but that were not even identified, but that have taken a lead in terms of voluntarily establishing these language units. In this case, I may make mention of the Department of Water Affairs and Forests. Their language unit is very big now. They have just started, you know, on their own. In other words, they listen to the persuasions and the appeals that they're making of the department. And the language department, I mean, the language unit, you know, once they are in place, they are expected to carry out in following functions. And strengthen the principle of multilingualism, raise awareness, manage and facilitate all translations, which of course will relieve as soon as they have this. Because as I've said many times, they always give them to us. Through feed and facilitate the printing and so on, and facilitate the use of internet. Again, when it comes to doing the job that I've just said they are set to do, it wasn't just a burden in terms of capacity, you know, putting the burden on the staff of the arts and culture, but also a financial strain. Because when we're doing these translations for them, we're not doing it for the fee, so just free of charge. And the funding, the departments and provinces will be responsible for their own budget, and they will provide adequate financial support in line with the METF cycle. And the costing of the language policy was done at the request of the cabinet committee. And it showed that it wouldn't really be that much, because according to what was quoted or it would be like not more than 3% of their total normal budget. And the budgeting that I'm talking about would take care of the following. recruitment and training of staff, the salaries of staff, the work program, described implementation, outsourcing of translation services where it is necessary. But sometimes due to lack of capacity, we always find ourselves having to outsource most of these services. You know, because sometimes due to pressure for time, you know, our in-house staff cannot cope with the workload. And the number of applications within a department and other standard items such as office equipment and so on. And then that takes us now to the next slide, which talks to budget projection. These were quoted for the what you call in 2003 when the National Language Policy Framework was adopted. And I think that for the year, financial year 2002-2003, 30%, you know, of the budget are quoted as shown there, and then it would increase, you know, to 50%, you know, the following financial year, and then 100%, which would then mean the full implementation, or the implementation in full scale. And then now, next slide talks about communication strategy. This I referred to when I said, you know, we did look at other measures of enforcing the National Language Policy Framework. And one possible route was this one of the communication strategy, which has already been approved, and all what is left now is just to implement it. And its sole goal is to create awareness about the National Language Policy Framework, and also to create publicity around Mashiri Wari's implementation. We hope then, in conclusion, I must say that the department, in conjunction with PEMSA, will be able to ensure the implementation of the cabinet decision. And it is hoped that the South African Language Practitioner Council will be elected as a matter of urgency. And all these together will work towards the achievement of this goal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome all of my thanks. Welcome to the this is the presentation. I have one question. I will be given a number to answer that question. I just want to make a comment that the members of parliament are trying their level best to use in the national system. I thought you would note that I don't hear you talking about us making sure that the language is all languages, because in our last debate, if you were there, members were debating in their own languages. So we're trying our level best to make sure that even parliament themselves, they do make sure that we promote, you know, the indigenous languages when they try to integrate. And then also, when we interviewing the council, who made recommendations to the minister, and we don't know if we never had anything, you know, concerning the council, because we made the recommendation. I thought, when was it? Some time ago, 2 months ago. We're not sure if we didn't hear anything. That's all together, guys. Just to follow up.
In terms of the recommendations that were made by the committee to the minister, I believe the recommendations were made on the letter was signed on the 3rd of October, but I only received that letter from parliament towards the end of October. And the minister was completely in the process of attending the vote.
Okay. We'll accept all the presentation. don't know why you went to the whole land, 25 land and 2. Because from us it goes to the office of the speaker. Yeah, and this is why to use that. It makes it for us. We don't want such, you know, mistakes. That's not a good thing. Yes.
Thank you, Chen. First, I just want to say that we can noted with appreciation that Parliament also, you know, the members there, therefore, to use all this language. I also heard that even the what you call the science in Parliament, you know, also changed as being, you know, issued in all things that are noted. That is noted with appreciation. Coming to the question of the establishment of language units in government departments, and to when exactly it's going to happen, and I just want to say that maybe we need to understand there what we may call the rules when making such awareness, when implementing such decision of cabinet. What we are mainly expected to do is to implement the communication strategy that I referred to, because that is intended to raise the language awareness so that the cabinet decision to establish, you know, these language units can be taken seriously and also can be understood why it is so important for those government departments to be able to establish. And as I said, you know, the approval or the, yes, the approval of the communication strategy has been obtained, and I cannot be in a position to say, you know, as a matter of certainty, to say that on a such a day, it is being started. But I can only say that they are going to start very soon, even though I cannot define very soon, because, you know, there are processes, procedures that need to be followed for the doing that thing. But I'm also at the same time expecting that the government departments themselves will help to take heed of that decision, and that coupled with the awareness campaigns that we're going to undertake, make sure that those language units are established. I made reference to some government departments that have already started doing that. And it becomes clear, you know, to us that this is just a matter of having to come to an understanding with the government departments, especially about the need and the meaning of establishing this. So I would say then the will and the determination and the infrastructure in terms of the communication strategy that I referred to, you know, all those are there, and it's just a matter of firing on that. And I can say that if everything is equal, that is going to happen very soon. Not unless something unimaginable can happen, but I'm not pessimistic. And then on the question of the sign language, I would say again the department has taken an initiative. You know, we have the what we call National Language Forum. I believe that members here in India are aware of that. You know, it comprises members from the government department, language units in the country, the national government department, language units in the provinces, municipalities, and so on. And we meet regularly and discuss issues around language. And this implementation of the National Language Forum has always been something that we always put on the agenda, on top of the agenda. And the last one that we had, the issue on sign language, was the main thing. And it was agreed in unity that the language unit should be, I mean, sorry, not language unit, the sign language should be considered as what's called 12 official languages. And as a result, we have moved ahead with that, you know, by trying to look at the ways, means of getting there. And one of them being, of course, to try and arrange a consultation forum with all the stakeholders from the sign language community. Because it looks like in terms of understanding that it should be there, because we regard this as a speech community, people speak this language, and then it should be there. All what is now is just the processes. And we have had some consultation with the minister, and it was again agreed that there are some discussions that are taking place to the minister in the president, who is also looking at this issue, and some of the things that we were looking at to, I mean, we targeted, such as writing a cabinet memorandum on this issue. We had to put on hold so that we can start consolidating the discussion, you know, with 10,000, with all the affected stakeholders, before we can move ahead. But basically what I'm saying here is that there is something that is being done, and this is considered as a serious matter, you know, on making, on officializing the sign language of the South African sign language. I must say that because, you know, it's always a difference, because the South African sign language is different from some other sign languages of the world. And then on the issue of the bursary scheme, yes, that is, we have had that scheme for some time, and to give a brief background, it first targeted, you know, postgraduate students in special fields within the language, you know, or certain specializations within the language field. And I would say those included translation, lexicography, language planning, human language technology, and other things. And much as I do not have the statistics now, because we always give, you know, annual reports, you know, for the department sometimes. We have been reporting on this matter. And I can only say that, you know, the outcome of this scheme was always positive, because we have quite a number of students who have benefited from this scheme. And again, because of that, positive, it was decided that in 2003, that it should be extended to include the undergraduate students, not only just targeting the postgraduate. And yes, that was implemented, and the languages that were targeted were those, you know, known as the most marginalized languages. That is Shivana, Shitonga, Sindabele, and Shiswati. So as we are speaking, with the exception of Shiswati exception of this was in particular. Because when the advertisement went out to the universities to say that we have this offer, and you know, some universities applied to say that, okay, we can take that, but that we have this offer those courses. I must make an example here of the University of Zululand, which applied for this one. And it turned out that when the nitty-gritties were being looked into, that that university was not ready in terms of the actual academic program for this one. In other words, there was no, what you call, approved academic program for this one. So those, that offer then could not be given to the University of Zululand, because they really had nothing to offer, you know. And with respect to Chivenda, also again, they had the same problem of not having an approved program for Chivenda. But fortunately, there was an approved program for Chivenda in the University of Limpopo. And the University of Limpopo offered to take those students. So, as we are taking the undergraduate students, are still benefiting from this. And to conclude, the last time we talked about the minister, I mean, with the minister about some of the language issues, he indicated that this bursary scheme should not be abandoned. So in other words, it's something that is at the core of the department, what you call it, program. I think maybe the one that has not answered is about the budget.
Yeah.
I don't know about this. I would request our DDG to talk more on this one. But what I just wanted to highlight is that, you know, on the, you know, the budget projection that we have there, we're merely indicating, you know, this was like major result of a survey, which indicated as to how much will the province need to spend for this. Like for instance, the two slides before this one, under funding, where it says costing for the language policy was done at the request of the Cabinet Committee for the Social Class, and it showed that they would not spend more than 3% of the adjustment normal budget. And the projections were those that are indicated in the 30%, 50%. But as to the actual, you know, money, honestly, I cannot answer that one. I always took that bit. People, you know, indicated for them, I mean, for the government department to say if we were to enforce this or to implement this, how much would you lose? So that has already been my understanding, because I cannot say that there was a budget that we put aside for this and what happened.
Yeah. That is going to be a little substantially different from what my colleague has said, and it is indeed true that those are projections. Whenever we submit a cabinet memorandum with policy implications, they're always, there's a heading that says financial implications, and therefore we have got to do some kind of number crunching to see whether we are able to deliver on that policy and how that policy would be financed. I suppose that what we would need to do now, that because those projections are outdated projections, based on the first time that we have gone to cabinet, and now we need to be able to say within this current medium-term expenditure framework, are those numbers actually still valid? And the bureaucratic engine means that they are not. Mm-hmm. They will use this device.
Yeah, I just want to apologize. I wanted to make a follow up on the question of this
not that quite, but it's still on languages. When is this effect of the mother? People there, they had a little complaint that nobody cares for them, especially you, the department, their languages are not spoken anywhere except by them where they are. All we want them for is to come and do dances when there's a big people in, and they mention children. Yes. But you only invite them, you don't know where they stay, what they eat, where they live, and the school they are attending. They are not included anywhere in the vocabulary. And we have even wrong names. They speak a language which is not their language. That is after passage. They have their own language, which is who and what is
correct.
I wonder how far, or is there anything that is being done to accommodate them? Because because they want to go back to their own way, their own culture. So my colleagues are suggesting me. So the urgent. Yes. Is there something that maybe you will in the near future, or you can do now, or nothing for them? Because maybe this is them again, and that time may not be very welcome as we were, because that was one of their main complaints.
I was going to I don't like giving improvised answers. I just feel very uncomfortable. And I would request a chance to go and talk with my colleagues in terms of the language board. I'd also like to just have a look at what is happening in the department of this time. And then I can provide a decent answer at the present moment. I'm sorry, I'm not able to. And I don't think it's appropriate to provide this answer.
To the minister and ask for the list of things specifically on that section in the constitution for those languages and the other language groups who are not official of the Portuguese people or whatever languages. I haven't got an answer back yet because the perception is that they haven't done anything and they're obviously, those languages are obligated in the constitution as well. The promotion and protection of all our 11 official languages, and the second, next section actually covers exactly that and the religious part as well. And there is the serious petition that we need to do. So that's the second.
Yes, I went
to the checking of the effort coming home. Don't forget that they say you don't know what they mean. So I find it very difficult for you to know where the people live. But just, you know, getting comprehensive details of the background of them, so that even us, I was not here that time, that's what you have detailed, you know, input to for the clever to understand. No, I'm not saying. I just wondered. On a phone, general assistant. Sorry.
What we are going to do is, because then we are going to be
them again upon to say that this is what he has promised and the Lord is coming to me. So I just wanted to say that to them.
I don't know why the opposition up against me this morning. The government of democracy is building the house, and they are not used to houses, and they want one house. They want to go live in the wild. They want to go back to the wild. So, it is often also something that is bad. Then we won't be as welcome as you were when you go back to them. That is one. Secondly, coming to the to the presentation, I want to ask a layman's question. What is it that is rolling on? I'm taking from one to honorable member and said to us, when is the ball rolling? First slide is saying you need capacity. Second one is saying, yes, there are milestones, but we need to do this, that, and that. Third one is telling us that there was postponement. The other one is telling us about 2012, when a secondary language unit would be established in various departments. There are budget protections. But from a layman point of view, I would want to understand what is it that is happening, that is eating from the budget that has been set aside for this purpose, if we would be, so that when we meet again, we say from this point we're supposed to have gone a further step. Instead of us saying that this is necessary, yes, yes, I must say that at least we're clearer now in understanding what the Abate is doing in terms of this damage that is going to take us now, or it has already taken us a number of years to think around how we can turn the wheel around so far as the damage is not caused by our party. We are counting 9 or 10 years from preparation, you know, and we think that by 2012 at least we would have made something. But it would also be proper for us to understand. And so far as this is concerned, what is it that is happening now in the process of implementing the necessities around languages and all?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. We're very intimidated. I'm forced to apologize to myself for coming late. Well, mine are just clarification points here. The first one would be the establishment of language units within departments. Yeah, I just want to understand. It means we would have 11 language practitioners or whatever in each and every department. That is what it means. And in relation to that, what would the language services within the Department of Arts and Culture, what will it be doing, or how will it aid this unit that would be in each and every department? And one other point would be on encouraging the media to show a multilingual image. I've been trying to crack my head and just thinking about how does that happen, how does Sunday time show a multilingual image to spread. If I could just clarify that. Another one, the establishment of South African Language Practitioners Council. It's just a clarification on practitioners in this sense, whom are we referring to? Are we referring to everybody from those that are at universities dealing with language to those that work in departments as language practitioners, or who is that they are referring to? Thank you for your chair.
Can I add on the point that we have to encourage I've been worried about Jonathan, who's a very important member of the department. She thought she had no chance. She's very difficult for the members of parliament to monitor whether these people are able to make sure that these are established without country. So I'm not very sure when these languages or departments and services are going to establish. Have they started? Have they started now or next year or when? It's not me. Thank you.
I'm not sure if I did mention it to the department before, but you have the University of Limpopo, Dr. Ramani, is doing on your one card, you spoke of the development of languages. The first bullet point was economic value to the African languages, which we fully endorse. You know that she's been doing it so that people could actually, because we can't all flock to Joburg and try and get a job there. So she's been doing this, but she could not get financial assistance for those courses. And she actually is getting funding from the Ford Foundation, and that's what they're going out. And I was wondering, it would not be worth the while that not only the Department of Education, but even this department actually have a follow-up on that. Because all those things that you didn't know, she's a bit of a world in that area that she used to do that for.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just answer two, because the other ones, we have got, my colleagues have got the detail on those questions. And let me address myself to the issue of the money came. And our fellow South Africans decide that they don't want to live in houses. They want to live in an alternative way of human settlement. It's determined that it's beyond us as a Department of Arts and Culture. Not to be because it becomes problematic also in terms of land claims and all other things. It comes with a lot of other layers, you know, that go beyond the issue of culture and cultural identity and cultural affirmation. So I will follow it, and I had a complaint from Andy Quinn in class, and when the municipality they came to the department and said that where you are building human settlements, we are not taking the put apartheid in South Africa is not taking into consideration cultural practice of African people, and that while we would, for example, find that there is they welcome that the fact that there is a clinic, they welcome the fact that there is a church, with all other things, but there are certain practices that we do as African people. Rwanda, for example, is one of the most elastic in the group. And how does that then take, how do we take the issues of human settlement into our cultural program? There is also another view that also says that within the human settlements themselves, at times we build and we do not take into consideration again the cultural needs, the spiritual needs of people, not the religious needs, but spiritual needs of people, and people would point to, for example, either housing patterns that have happened throughout the world, where when you do not take that into consideration, you find that people have got no other place to go to except to find alcohol, to find other activities that might not be constructive and conducive towards a building community. This becomes a challenge for us, particularly when we are talking within the context of social cohesion, because social cohesion comes from community. And so I do take the question that being raised from the military quite different. But it has got both, I mean, a social depth and a political breadth that needs to be dealt with. And I don't think that we will be doing ourselves justice to say that us as African culture alone are able to provide answers to that question. We have been having some conversation with our colleagues in the Department of Housing about the whole issue of human settlement, and our approach to it. And not because we are we are the one government department stepping on each other's toes, but it's more about saying how do we enhance each other's work, and so that at the end of the day, when we're saying we have built houses, we know that not only have we succeeded in providing shelter, but we have also succeeded in building communities. And the issue of building communities then lies within us as the Department of Arts and Culture. And these are the conversations that we need to have when we're talking about social cohesion. We are not yet, honorable members. In the January quarter, we did table a claim where the Department of Arts and Culture is leading in the social cluster on the issue of social cohesion. And we presented to cabinet culture, and it was quite an engaging conversation, but I think it's a political conversation that can happen between the minister and the portfolio committee. And but there is work that is being done on this very important new area of our work. And I think that some of these questions then need to be looked at within that context. Having said that, I want to hand over to my colleague so that he can begin to answer the technical information that is required. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'll start with the last one about the concern raised by Dr. Raman from the Investor of Limpopo. And I'd also like to say that indeed what she was saying is true. It's important, you know, to inject economic value to these languages. Otherwise, you know, people won't see the need why they have to study African languages in some other language. I must say that from time to time, the Department of Arts and Culture does offer some financial support to projects that are aimed at promoting multilingualism and the value of this language. It's unfortunate, of course, that I don't know whether Dr. Raman has, you know, sent a proposal to the department. But the procedure is that, you know, whoever has got a project that he or she thinks will add value to African languages, they will send a proposal and it gets evaluated and the person gets notified as to whether, you know, he has been given that financial support. In this particular case, I would say that it will be helpful if maybe she could send another proposal if she has one. And then the other question about the establishment of South African Language Practitioners Council, I think the question was really about the classification as to what does that all mean. If we were to look at it and say people who are practicing, you know, in languages like translators, educators, scholars, and so on, all those are professionals, and that is a profession. And so, like all other professions, there was a need, you know, to say that, you know, let there be a council that is going to be responsible for the standards, you know, and as well as the regulations. So that people who are given that responsibility should not just do whatever they think they can do. You know, they must properly contain set standards. That's the point about the South African Language Practitioner Council, about the profession of language practitioners, translators, educators, scholars, and then the other question was about the establishment of language units within government departments and how will the Department of Arts and Culture relate to this. Basically, the Department of Arts and Culture is the lead department, you know, in issues of language. It's mainly concerned, you know, with matters around policy, driving the policy, and given the need to have the legislation on language being driven by that department, or policy, political area. However, when it comes to relations, it is expected that whatever language service that is being rendered for the country, you know, all the stakeholders, you know, are expected to be working together. So, like right now, for example, I said that there are departments that already have this language. And they are working quite very well with the Department of Arts and Culture in terms of language advice, giving advice. And we also know provinces have to come up with their own provincial language policy. And again, the Department of Arts and Culture is there, you know, to give support and ensure that all those things that our colleagues in the other government departments are attempting to do, you know, a question that was also asked by the chair, which relates to this one, I would say that in as far as we are concerned, the department is concerned, the whole issue of establishing the language unit is overdue. So you made what you call a point there by saying that there is no time frame. And I want to say that the strategy that should be recommended to let people know the government department that we need to adapt it. The issue of time frame is that I want to believe that, despite the fact that unfortunately we don't have the document right now, but definitely, I mean, they're not going to be able to say adapt it to and they decide that without saying that. So that's a very important point that you're talking about. And then coming to the question of the question was what is happening, specifically referring to some, aspects that appear on the slide and the follow-up question, thanks for the thing. I think I was that if something is being put on hold and this and this, what is then eating the budget, and so on. I want to say that the Department of Arts and Culture has a fully fledged language, this national language service, which is driving the policies and also not only doing that, but also doing the production work in terms of the translation work that is being done there and the editing and everything. So, as far as the department is concerned, it has got a fully fledged language. And the reporting or the briefing that we are giving today here was mainly about this what you call this capacity. But of course that wasn't really intended to say that other than that there isn't anything else that is happening. The reports, annual reports and everything, is reflected in all those documents. But these are the things that are being done. I've already talked about it, the translation, otherwise the production work that is taking place, technology work that is taking place, human language technologies, so many other things, even the language research and development centers, so the work that is done in some of those centers and so on. So indeed, I want to say when I'm addressing that question, there is the fully fledged language unit that is working on all those aspects of language work that I mentioned, But by the lack of capacity in this particular case, it's mainly concerning the lack of those language units that we say they should be adapted. Because, like as I said from the beginning, that puts a big budget on the department in terms of helping to do all the work, when in actual fact that work could be mainly easier by, sharing and testing the language units, doing some of the language work. So basically that's it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question concerning the translation.
My colleague would talk to the issue of the principle of rotation amongst these languages. But I think that one of the things perhaps that we might need to consider as we move forward when we're looking at the interaction between the department and the portfolio committee is that perhaps we need to put a little bit more space and focus on the issues of language. I think they really do need some attention. And
probably because of the complexity of the issue, and generally we tend to engage tentative, so at one stage we really need to be able to say if I don't know what framework that can come in, that on the issues of languages, has to be able for us to say what kind of progress has been made, where exactly are we, where exactly are the challenges, and so that the portfolio committee, I think it's we are now putting you on policy unit within government, and we're going to now be going to human languages technology, all kinds of kind of work that is happening, but I think that what is important, one needs to have a picture of this jigsaw puzzle. You know, because, for example, one of the things that we would like to do is to, when we're presenting our community library strategy, and how do those impact on language development, human language technology, publishing in indigenous languages, so that one, you begin to address. I think the thing that needs to happen is that we need to be able to say to ourselves, when we're talking about the issues of language, where are we in terms of policy? And then we move through it and we are able to say, where are we in terms of implementation? Where are we in terms of the challenges and other opportunities? And I think human language technologies, libraries, ICTs, those are the areas of opportunity in terms of developing the languages and adding into the economic value of these languages. But and I think that if we can begin to do that, perhaps the conversation and the input from the members of all of the portfolio committee would be more informed. And then we will be more able to assess whether to assess the challenges and to assess the impact that has been made. But it's a very sensitive area, the issues of language. It's a very, very sensitive area. And most whenever people talk about it, we always talk within the framework of complaining. And there's no other way of talking about this issue except by complaining. And I don't know if that is actually the national consultation that is required at this moment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you mind if you break for she, no? Because I left place, no? Yeah, that is it. We would break for 5 minutes. Break our day.
I'm not the one that's going to be 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 the one that Oh,
thinking that a service that the Department of Urban undertook to do with the aim of trying to make information readily available to people in the language that they speak. And this particular one that I'm talking to was preceded by a pilot project, which was done by the University of the Free State. And of course, like all pilot projects, the aim was just to check if this is a feasible thing, if it's something that is worth doing. And the University of Free State did it, and it became obvious that, well, it's something that the Department of Agriculture could undertake to do. And the question again was around who should be doing it. And given the complexity of the service itself, because it needed some pay hikes and what you call call centers and all those things, it was decided that it should be given to a service provider outside the department. And the service provider that won the bid for this one, the one that had a three-year contract, which has expired, was called Holola Optical Consortium. I want to say that then a contract was signed, and from the beginning, it was like, I'm under introduction now, but it's the second contract. When it started in 2004, because it was a three-year contract, it started well, but soon it became obvious that there were problems, so it was just caused by serious problems, and or rather say challenges, you know. And those were like the non-delivery on the part of the consortium, and there were also some fraudulent activities that were noticed, and there was the poor financial management and reporting. So since there was a project charter, which was sort of articulating the manner in which the whole project was going to be, you know, unfolded, and then it became clear that in terms of the reporting system, and they were not consistent in terms of reporting at the times that were they were expected to be giving the report. And what was also serious is the underutilization of the heater by stakeholders. There were very low call volumes in those centers. They were just there, but people were not making use of them. And of course, when it comes to that, the serious challenge on marketing, there was a belief that maybe it was not marketed enough in terms of making people aware that there is what you call call centers or this service that they have to make use of. But nonetheless, that one remained a serious concern in the sense that if people were not using it, then the question would be, why was it there in the first place? But apart from those, as I've mentioned, there were those that have had to do with delivery, such as poor reporting and financial management and so on. That led to what you call a health assessment. The health assessment was intended to check as to whether there is anything, what is it that is going wrong, because it was becoming clear that there was something that was not right, you know, in terms of delivering the service. And the health assessment noticed that there were quite a number of things that were not happening or that were not done right by the consortium. And as I have said, that the consortium was known as Holola Optical. Those were two what you call companies, the other one rendering the aspect of the service, and the other one another aspect of the service. And so there was then what you call a suspension of the Holola, because it was discovered that something was wrong with the Adam, that is the other part of the consortium. And that led to the suspension. And after suspension, Holola made an urgent application for that suspension to be set aside. And that suspension, actually, we had to consult our legal team, that is the Department of Arts and Culture legal team. And they advised that an out-of-court settlement, you know, due to technicalities which was signed by both parties should be, and they wished to be. And an arbitration was imminent if parties did not agree on the way forward. So that was the agreement that then there should be an what you call out-of-court settlement, and then the arbitration will follow if there was no agreement. And then that left now three options, you know, for DAC. One was that given the report, which was conducted by what's called the Kabade Forensic Audit, that the one option was to dismiss the consortium on the grounds of lack of delivery, which would then prolong the settlement process with further legal implications and the people which is continuing the case at all. So that was an option. But the other one was to say maybe we need to compel the consortium to resolve the problem raised by the Kabate Forensic Audit Report and develop contracts that looked after the interests of the AC and of the KFFS. And they could have punished those who performed their duties relatively well, putting the AC at risk for more legal pressure. And the third option was to offer the opportunity to the EE campus. So considering all these options, in fact, I must say that the reason why there was these options, because the legal team felt that we should not just, you know, act, you know, anyhow on this matter, because we would be sort of inviting more litigation on this matter, because the consortium itself was fragmented. Some other parts of the consortium were feeling like they are delivering and others not delivering. So, and yet the department has a contract not only just with, you know, part of the consortium, but with the consortium as a whole. So the option then that was left was that let's compel the consortium to resolve the problem raised by the Kabate audit report. And that is, risk management would be the responsibility of the consortium, and management of TISA would have an inbuilt accountability mechanism, and there would be no additional financial implications for DAC. And that TISA governance structure would serve the interest of both the DAC as a sponsor and TISA as a trustee. And financing TISA would be simplified, and reporting would be timely, and stakeholders would receive continuous service, and the project success would be guaranteed. So that's the option that we're doing. Okay, that let's not suspend, you know, and or maybe the whole consortium, let's just look at that. And after the expiration of the contract, which I think was 21st of August 2006, GAC thought that then the that consortium, definitely given all these problems, would not be suitable, you know, even if they wanted to renew it. But the option was to appoint a new service provider in the interest of the continuous option. And the decision to appoint the new one is proving to be difficult because of the following reasons. One, all the sites installed since the project inception consistently and persistently reached at low call volume. This I mentioned at the beginning. But now the question is it really necessary? What can be done to ensure that, you know, people make use of this service? Because even if the problems that I've highlighted has not taken place, still, it would be a problem to have a service that is not human. And the consortium tasked with management of the operation of TISA could not raise the local volume for the whole time the service was rendered. So the court settled not being over, it would be possible to involve a new service provider. and at this stage it would be prudent to conduct an evaluation to inform the decision whether to continue the deal with Kiva or not. In other words, what is proved by this consortium or the time at which this service was rendered, starting from 2004 up to August 2006, was that there was something seriously wrong with the project. Wrong on the part of the consortium and also wrong on the part of the service not being used. So what is then being suggested is that DAC must be kind of careful, you know, about any decision that might be taken regarding CISA before an evaluation of the project is conducted. And presently, the department wishes to conduct an evaluation of the CISA project. You know, the results thereof would then inform the department as to how to go about implementing this service again. The department is fully aware of the fact that this is a very important service. And we must say that, you know, since the service was rendered in various areas within the country, some people were really appreciating. But again, the problem is that there was this low call volume. Most sites, you know, they were just underutilized. And, you know, that then was even made worse by the problems that were discovered, you know, around the management of the service, especially by the consortium. So I have next to me here Mr. Anil, you know, who was also deeply involved in this in terms of dealing with the consortium. I think, you know, I should just hand over to him so that he can also indicate some of the important areas that the members here would like to know about, you know, the problems that I've referred to. And after the decision, saying that, okay, let's have another service provider, but also bearing in mind that it would be more prudent to get another service provider, having understood all the problems well, and having a quick ourselves as to how to make sure that we do not experience a repeat of this poor management and what you call underutilized service of something that we all consider, you know, important.
Thank you. Madam Chair and honorable members, I think Dr. Jokwini has covered most of the points. I think just to update on the where we are with CISA, with the consortium, the department is investigation to recover the amount that was indicated in terms of the forensic report that was not utilized correctly or in accordance with getting the department value for money. So we have instructed the state attorneys to pursue a claim to recover from the consortium, and its litigation in progress at this stage.
Perhaps if I can just say to the honorable members that when this project was actually launched, when we did the pilot project, one of the things that we wanted to address was this question of how do we impact on service delivery. And we worked together with our colleagues, saying we're going to pilot with a police station so that if people, for example, get into the police station, they want to report a case, and they find a police officer who's not speaking that particular language, can they then get an interpreter who will be able to do the docket and actually expedite the service of delivery of and police. And at first, when it actually took off, the numbers were not that bad. But somehow the usage of the service declined. And when the usage of the service declined, we then had to ask ourselves the question, are we now going towards
and how do you manage something like was supposed to deliver this particular service, but now it's not really performing to our expectation. And then we decided to investigate the causes. And as my colleagues have outlined, some of the causes were that there was, I think, incompatibility between the two service providers, first of and foremost, and it just undermined the service design. And it also then impacted on the usage of the service itself. And in light of that, we then decided that we would make the necessary interventions. And we have made those necessary interventions. And we're going to also come back with another comprehensive report on this matter. But we just wanted to alert you to this project and the management, actually the risk management that we are putting in place in terms of the project itself. I still believe that the intentions were good, and perhaps if we reformulate the approach towards the project, we can still manage to deliver the services. Because our view was that if we were targeting police stations, we were targeting hospitals, we were targeting the court. Because it becomes very difficult when somebody is not able to speak English, is confronted with a doctor who cannot speak Xhosa or Setswana, and then you have got to be expressing yourself and say, this is, what is me, or this is what my needs are. And we thought that if we could provide a language service at those critical centers, justice, health, hospitals, courts, and police station, then we would at least be spreading the delivery of services in terms of the language. As I said, we started piloting with some few police stations across the country. And the verdict that we are having now is that we are having serious problems. And we are managing those problems. But this is contact and health. You should know about it.
The way the manner in which it works is that somebody would go to a police station.
Then somebody would go to a police station and request a case and probably say, this is my language and I'm unable. The police station that the pilot team person would go in and then they would say, I would like to have Tibet, for example, Prime Minister, because the police man that I'm talking to, the police woman, I'm talking to, not understand. Then there were call centers, all right, that were linked, that were established through the university as well, and there were interpreters. And then you would then connect to that particular interpreter. And the interpreters were on the rotating system, so that in a particular period, you know that you've got so many translators that you can rely on to provide that particular service. And then the people at the police station would then call that particular interpreter and say, we've got this challenge, and then that service would be interpreted. At first, we found out that during the week, for example, there was much usage. Much of the usage was happening over weekends. And in terms of the service. But I think the basic challenge was, I don't think communication-wise, the thing was actually quite thoughtful so that it could just get into the community. I think that one of our challenges that earlier on is that the original framework was not really orientated towards very much of a service delivery, more than if it really just moved towards an academic exercise. And that's what we're trying to stop.
I know quite a language, you must use. I'm not really sure if it's okay, one of the first.
No, Sir President, but I'm not happy. I just wanted to go further back. Given the fact that the whole process will be going as a center once again, I don't know whether it will be like for us to raise questions for the whole, it's going to be under the scene.
Let me allow people if they are transportation for the same they are being.
Okay, now I just want to know what as I understand it sent an ink for this last year. Or is somebody else getting on in the meantime? Somebody thinks here that started in 2004 and ends in 2030. What this claim that you signed this in, what money are we talking about?
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think the forensic investigation, or as my colleague referred it to the health assessment, basically indicated that there was mismanagement of funds to the tune of about 6 million. So that is what we are pursuing in terms of the litigation. I don't have the exact amount, but it's to the tune of.
The reason why I'm also quite sensitive in my answer is because there is litigation that's going on, there is investigation, forensic audit that's going on, but we just thought that we would bring the matter to your attention, and so that you know that the matter is being handled, and that investigations are underway. And these are the amounts that are being investigated. And perhaps what we will do is that when we have completed with the forensic and completed with the investigation processes, we can then come to Parliament and say to Parliament, these are our findings. And I think then when we reach that point, we will be able to engage in a more meaningful way than we are now. I think now we've got a matter of sensitizing and saying that there is a matter like this.
would wait for the test, and then when we have questions, then we can just touch. I think the next section is the heritage month.
Yes, and the last item is the heritage month. Mrs. Van der Mark has just asked some financial things on the and then the CFO has said that, that when we are consulting over Dr. Shikanda, he has some information that he would like to provide, and then we can go into heritage matter. It'll probably take 2 minutes for 1 minute.
No, it's fine.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Professor. No, Madam Chair, I was just going to be able to just elaborate an element of the budget. Because the numbers that I touched in the presentation are projections. We have thus far now made a new policy bid to National Treasury in order to be able to deal with the element of what's called HLT. That will be also be elaborated on as time goes on. Thank you. Yes. Yes, Madam.
The next item then is the heritage month and the person who's going to be leading that one is Ms. Zimma. Oh, it's HLT. Oh, that is technology. Sorry. And Dr. Zuber is still going to carry on with the presentation on human language and technology.
Thank you, Chair. on this one, I just want to start off by saying that on the agenda, what we have is human language technology.
I'm so sorry. Because I thought that you said the class 7 to what I was saying the last time came to everything. I don't remember we going down to listen to the human language quality or the class 7 to the subject. Thank you. Now, I just wanted to make sure that we never by any way frame an attending of what we're doing because I took over everything. Okay.
Thank you. I'm just saying that when we look on the agenda, there is written human language technology. And what we are going to present here, because when we talk about the human language technology, that's too broad and too general. So I just want to sort of give you an understanding as to what is going to be presented, you know, as the documentation that we have. We're going to be presenting the Human Language Technologies National Strategy, which is part and parcel of the human language technologies in general. So in short, I'm saying that apart from the strategy, which is like what we call a policy position on human language technology, there are many other things that are being done under human language technology in the Department of There are projects that are currently running. I can just briefly mention projects such as the development of time checkers, projects such as development of machine-aided translation tools, and projects such as the development of a multilingual telephone-based information system for government and so on. But this particular presentation here is just about the National Strategy for Human Language Technology. But it has become a trend that when one has to present anything on human language technology, the starting point should just be about the definition. So what you see there, for instance, you know, on the very first page, it sort of covers what human technology or language technologies are all about. Then the human language technologies are those information technologies that facilitate and support communication through human language across languages in spoken and written form. And it provides for a wide range of applications for which a person can interact with an automated system simply by using his or her language of choice. So basically the key there is just this human technology interaction. And as we know, interaction can be what you call the spoken language, or can be in written. In other words, it can be an interaction by text, where you type something and then you get a response, or it can be by people saying something and then you interact on whatever subject you are interacting on. And then the national strategy itself, as I said, is more or less about the what you call the policy position. Because if we look at the what you call the whole field of human language technology, there are many things that are happening, many activities throughout the country, and all those are just fragmented activities that are not coordinated. And again, because this is about language, then the what you call the Department of Arts and Culture, because of having that mandate to lead on language issues, then it has to see to it that all the human language technology activities are coordinated. And this is not only just a matter of, you know, wanting to coordinate those things, it's also referred to in the national language policy framework. So again, it's part of the whole endeavor to ensure that, you know, these languages, all official languages are developed and that multilingualism is being promoted. So I'll say, in collaboration with the HLT steering committee, the HLT unit of the National Language Service combined the HLT national strategy with a view to avoid duplication of efforts and to pool that resources through coordination and integration of HLT. So that's the main, the broad aim of the strategy, to say that all activities in the country on HLT should be coordinated. And the steering committee that I'm referring to was appointed by the minister, and it includes representatives from some key, what you call, role players such as the FENSAL, the National Research Foundation, CSIRC, CCIS, and most importantly, also the institutions of higher learning. So the process itself to the coordination of HLT activities and establishment of the center was initiated back in 1999-2000. So again, that is important, you know, to highlight, because it indicates again how, slow the process has been in terms of achieving this goal. And that was initiated by the then Department of Arts and Culture, Arts, Culture, Science and Technology, and it was done in collaboration with the government. So that endeavor led to the establishment of the Ministerial Advisory Panel on HLT in 2001. The aim of that advisory panel was to say, advise me on how to go about, you know, doing the HLT activities and coordinating them. Because as I'm saying, it's a relatively new field, but it was by that time noticed already that there was a lot that was happening, but fragmented and not integrated. And the reason for integrating and coordinating all these things cannot be overemphasized. As we all know that, you know, it is important in terms of pulling the resources together and ensuring that there is no duplication. And the report of that panel, following the report of the panel, the current HLT steering committee was appointed in 2003 to carry the process forward. In other words, the steering committee to work hand in hand with the Department of Arts and Culture to see to it that the a position taken around the coordination of HLT activities in the country. And the development of HLTs is in line with the constitutional provision that requires that practical and positive measures be taken to elevate the status and advancement of all South African official language. And as I said earlier, specific reference is mentioned to HLT in section 3.4 of the National Language Policy Framework. So we talked about the National Language Policy Framework. And again, if some of the requirements and things that are mentioned there are not carried out, it means that national language policy framework is not implemented fully. So the development of an HLT strategy is indicated in section 4 as one of the implementation mechanisms of the national language policy framework. A that we already know by now that by having, you know, those SLTs who are enabling people to access information in the languages of their choice. So again, that is one way of implementing the national language policy framework, which says there should be what you call the principle, I mean, a policy of mastery equality. And the draft SLT strategy outlines the context of the strategy. In other words, this draft says something about the historical and the legislative background of the strategy itself. And of course, it entails the key element, I mean, the key elements which entail the objectives, the principles, and the provisions. And most importantly, the major role players. And I cannot really overemphasize the benefits, because they are so important to know why it is so important to have this strategy in the first place, to have this activity coordination, as well as the implementation process. And as far as the objectives are concerned, I think, as we see in the judgment, they are more or less straightforward, but I just can quickly mention some of them, not all of them. Say that the objectives are to ensure the regret of previous marginalized indigenous languages by involving technological tools in enhancing their usefulness beyond their traditional views, and to develop and support human capacity building initiatives and ensure access to all HLT resources generated through government funds by creating the necessary infrastructure, as well as the proper coordination of HLT activities in the country. Otherwise, we will remain with the problem of having all these fragmented teams. Maybe I must also mention here before I move on and say that one important thing about having this strategy, it emphasizes the what we call the establishment of an HLT center, which is supposed to be a resource center of the linguistic what we call data that can be used. Because when we talk about the development of the human language technology application, two things come into play and they complement each other. One is to make use of the linguistic data, and two is then the development of the application itself. Because you cannot develop any application without making use of the what is called the linguistic data. And to get the linguistic data is not an easy thing at all. So which makes it so important to have a resource center where these linguistic data can be reused and reused. In other words, if a particular what you call an institution has developed a certain application, and then when they have to what you call develop another thing, they should not start from the beginning and look for the data, because the data, as I mentioned, can be spoken and written data. So to get all those data, and the data itself also has to be processed. And that process is not an easy thing, because as we know, I mean, for us to be able to speak, that's just a gift from God. We don't know exactly those who have studied that as to what makes it possible for one to articulate things, sounds, words, meanings, and so on, constructed in a sentence. But for this thing to happen, the data has to be processed from the beginning. As we're talking about it being automated, it has to be sorted out at the very, very first level, that is the phonetic level, to be identified, to be able to identify certain sounds and say this is the sure, it's different from the and it's different from good, and so on. And also to be able to identify, you know, this at another level above that, which is the word level. And that is the what we call the starting from the phonological level and also to the word level, that is the morphological level, to be able to differentiate as to where the word ends and where the word begins, and also at the what's called syntactic level, that is the structure of the sentence itself, and that goes up to the meaning. So with all those data having to be processed like that, the application or the development of any application cannot be done without that, which is why I said, you know, these are like two complementary aspects of it. So the content of the center then is about that. To say that instead of, if like we want to develop the spell checkers today or this year, and then we have to collect the data and have this data process, you know, and then some other time somebody wants to improve on the spelling, on the spell checkers and so on. It's just from the beginning to look for the data. Whereas if there is a resource center for the data, just a pool of reusable data and so on. And then around the principles, then we're saying that focus will be on the development and use of official languages through the adaptation or development of appropriate technologies, and also on the needs of all citizens, regardless of language preference, level of literacy, physical condition, financial disposition, or locality. And will take place with financial support of national government, while involved in the private sector, energy to develop efficiency in the country. On the next slide, we're talking about the provisions, which I think also are very important. To say that the strategy applies unconditionally to all government structures, because the question may arise here as to, is this an endeavor for, you know, the national government or provincial government or what is just all government structures? And agency activities within government will be coordinated, managed, and marketed. And the National Center for HLC will coordinate research, development, training, and consultation over a broad spectrum. And priority will be given to undertakings that facilitate and promote government priority projects. The national and international experts will advise and assist the HLC. And advisory panel with broad stakeholder representation will guide the activities of the National Center. On the next slide about the major role players, I think that it's very important to understand that this doesn't mean to say that there won't be any other role players, you know, depending on the interest that you need. But these are what are those that have been identified as the most crucial ones, that is science and technology, communication, trade and industry, the broadcasting corporation, I mean South African Broadcasting Corporation. GPIS, CETA, PENSAL, CSIR, there is a Miraka Institute in CSIR, which is specializing on the development of HLT applications. National Research Foundation, higher education institutions, as well as international role players and private sector. Those so far have been identified as the most, what we call, role players that can have a stake and participate activity. And coming to the benefits, you know, because basically the benefits are about access to government services and being delivered at most convenient times and locations in language of citizens' choice. The most important thing there is about having these things, you know, delivered and it's all interaction in one's language of choice. And the telephone services, including cellular telephones, those are some of the what you call options, will be a major service delivery tool, and access to information on health issues, proficiency to register for pension, health, unemployment, marriage, ID documents, passports, etc. And relatively low levels of infrastructure user client sophistication required. And then the benefits continued, and then talking about multilingualism. Saying capacity to display, search, and process multiple languages on a website or system, as well as verbally communicating with the system using the language of choice, is a basic requirement for functional multilingualism. Maybe again, when it comes to these interactions that I've just been talking about, saying that, you know, when we interact, you know, in a spoken or in a written, what you call, way. I can just make an example, for instance, of the ATM. What you call ATM here, where you get there and using whatever prompt that you use, you engage into an interaction with the machine, because you write something and it writes something back to you. You know, it's not automatically just press whatever you press and get the money. You have to ask you how much you want, and of course there are questions that may not be necessary, such as what you want that money for. From which account and so on. And then also I referred earlier on to computer assisted language learning and contribute to citizens becoming multilingual and ability to access technology through language of choice will reduce reluctance to use technology, narrowing, of course, the digital divide. And the benefits go on to economic development, you know, where we talk about improved language communication abilities with increased industrial competitiveness, you know, e-commerce and call center-based applications, potential commercialization of HLT applications in the indigenous languages, ideal for their empowerment and so on. Then again, most importantly, the accommodation of people with disabilities. Because, you know, when these things are being done, they shouldn't also only be focusing on, you know, some sect of people and forgetting others. So we're saying that it will also benefit those with disabilities by providing things such as speech-based systems application for illiterate as well as for visual impact and physical impact communication things using voice only. Voice-enabled typing enables users to speak to the computer and have the text appear on the screen without having to type it. And so on. Speech recognition technology enables hearing impaired users to receive verbal communication in the written form. And text-to-speech systems, because when we talk about interaction, in this particular case, it can be a text-to-speech in right, and then you get the speech, and or you speak, you get the writing. And then the implementation process. The National Center for HLT will be established as a repository of the reusable electronic text and speech data. I think I'll overemphasize the importance of this one by saying that it is the main thing about it, the keyword is reusable. Because if we have to move fast in terms of, you know, developing in this area, you do not have to waste time by repeating something that has been there and has been used and can still be used by some other people. Most of the time, you know, when you talk about language, the data in particular, it's the same sound, you know, and to a large extent, same word, but depends on what is it that you want to communicate. Otherwise, as we're sitting here, all of us, you know, I am doubt, you know, with that ability to articulate sound. So if all those sounds can be sorted out and processed, it means they can be a very good resource for whoever wants to make use of that without having to start from scratch and build that. And that's what we call the resource of data. And the HLT unit within the National Land Service will coordinate HLT activities within government trust and work in close cooperation with the center. We'll also monitor progress and report on the and report to relevant authorities. Again, still on the implementation, saying measures will be taken to forge collaboration and active networking with international bodies. Already there are some international bodies, especially from the what's called European Union, who are interested, and are not only just interested, but also in assisting, because some people have made advancements in this area somewhere. So if, like, for instance, this is takes off here in South Africa, it will not only just be the first of its kind in South Africa, but in Africa as a whole. And we're talking about internally driven projects as well as the externally driven projects. And when we refer to internally driven, we are referring to those that will focus on the basic development function of the center, or how those, what you call, data should be processed and so on. And externally driven will be responsive to the needs of government operations. In which case, any department can say that the most important thing that we need at this point in time is in as far as accessing information is concerned. And then considerations will be given to have that thing, you know, taken as a project. The next slide on the implementation process, we're saying government structures will have time to plan their budgets by increasing allocations, you know. And funding from government sources will be used for the development of human resources and the systematic development of language resources and language processing tools. Because even the processing that I referred to is not something that just happens automatically. It needs a lot of tools to develop tools which will enable those data to be processed in such a way that they can be used and still be in a position to be reused. and the private sector will get involved in the funding and development of Asian TMT system funds from national international programs will be used to stimulate the development of Asian TMT projects. And Asian TMT projects that can be commercialized will be encouraged to become self-supported. Here, for example, I make an example of the data. The data that I've spoken about, which will be, you know, accommodated in the standard, can be commercialized when it comes to private sector. There are so many, what you call, companies, private, in the private sector that are interested in using, you know, certain data to develop certain things in the area of technology. And we're saying, furthermore, the center will ensure access to all agency resources that have been generated through government funds by creating an infrastructure for collecting, developing, managing, and distributing reusable language resources such as electronic text and speech data. And then we're saying, in order for the agency initiative to succeed, it is imperative that the strategy be approved by government and implemented in that area. And the reasons for this are very obvious. The agency unit initiated the process of getting the strategy approved by the Department of Arts and Culture and at a broad management meeting held in Cape Town in September, a decision was taken that a submission be written to the minister to request his approval of the strategy to be taken to TIC and MINMEC, and that has happened. In other words, the approval has been given. So in short, we are saying that the minister is giving his full support of this initiative. And most importantly, like as I gave what you call a brief background on the historical background, saying that the initiative itself, you know, was something that was thought about as early as 1999. And if we look at the steering committee that I'm talking about, which I said was being established in 2003 and given a 5-year term, then it means now it's about to complete that term. Mm-hmm. And if it has to complete that term and with this agency strategy and the standard not yet established, again, that is a problem. And so the long and short of it about it is that we are saying there is such a great need for the what's called strategy to be established, and the center also, in order to be established and in order for it to function properly, it has to be put within the what's called the context of the strategy, because the strategy is the overall in terms of giving the policy direction as to what things, how things should be done and how they should be monitored and how they should be managed and so on. So this has then been brought to the portfolio committee, and it is hoped that your understanding of it, especially the need and the urgency, will contribute to the approval of the strategy by cabinet and you know, the subsequent implementation. I tell you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That's by the way of introduction. It was quite interesting how you see passion coming to over the last 3 years, we have been celebrating we have dedicated Heritage Month into a component of living heritage. We focus on food, we focus on music, and I can't remember the third one. Focus on what food, what music. Yeah. And now, this month, we are celebrating special emphasis on on indigenous languages. And the chief director for heritage, Mr. Ndimai, is here, and we'll take us through the presentation. I'm sure it will take about 15 minutes. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Wadash. Thank you, Chairperson. As Mr. Wadash has indicated, that the theme for this year is celebrating South African poetry, with special emphasis on indigenous languages that have been underprivileged. But maybe I think it's also important that I focus on the strategic objectives of this particular theme. As outlined in the first slide, it's to promote a culture of reading and writing to revitalize the South African languages and literature, both in their oral and written form, but also to stimulate the growth and development of South African literature in indigenous African languages. And it is also to create new audiences, especially among our youth. It is to highlight the role of oral narrative, such as poetry, play in the transmission and preservation of culture and history from one generation to another. Last but not least, it is to use poetry as a vehicle to transmit the ideals and values of Ubuntu nation building and social cohesion. The scope and implementation. I just want to also indicate that we're looking at Heritage Month, not only Heritage Day. Therefore, we'll be having the stages of the development of this particular month. First and foremost, we'll have the launch of Heritage Month. The Heritage Month launch will be held on 8 September. I know that in terms of the documentation that was sent, it was the 1st of September. But because of some unforeseen circumstances, it had to be changed because the minister will be out of the country on the 1st of September. So it will be held in Cape Town, and then the proposed venue is Kwalana. It will be hosted, of course, by the Department of Arts and Culture, the Western Cape Province, as well as the Cape Town Metro. Already, a small focus working group has been established to conceptualize the launch. And the group is actually comprising of high-profile poets such as Don Matera and Professor Willie Hotisile and other prominent poets who are actually helping with the conceptualization, not only the conceptualization of the launch, but the entire month. And a comprehensive program will be shared with you once it has been finalized. But in terms of the launch, because it's going to be happening in Cape Town, at Kwalana, preference would be given to local poets in the Western Cape province. Also, there's going to be provincial poetry workshops. And these poetry workshops are actually developmental because they are designed to groom young poets in the art and skill of writing poetry. And a person who will also be taking a lead in these workshops is Professor Khosi Sile, who will be assisted by 10 student South African poets spread throughout the country. But also we are working in partnership and collaboration with SABC. They have got a project which is called the Inquest Project. When we approached SABC, to our pleasant surprise, is that we went to SABC with a view to saying that they were going to help us in terms of communicating our programs to the South African public. But when we met with them, we only to find that they also had programs on poetry that have been running since 2005. Hence this project, which is called the Inquest Project, which is also, which has got similar kind of objectives in the sense that they are developmental. They are trying to scout for talent in all the provinces. Not only scout the talent, but also to develop that talent so that we can have the best poets in the country. Then the National Heritage Day celebration will be held on 24 September in Mangaung, Free State. I wouldn't like to burden you with the official program because it's kind of a standing item. So really the official program, but also a cultural program
have also requested the president through the minister to officiate in this particular program. And in terms of the cultural program, what we envisage is a blend of music and poetry. And on the 23rd of September, we also envisage a poetry evening. So on the eve of the 24th, we have a poetry evening at the park house in Bloemfontein. Also, I would like to also talk about the Joint Standing Committee, but that, as you can see there, the Department of Arts and Culture and all the other relevant stakeholders that will enhance the success of this particular program. But also in this slide, if you can just go back to this slide, I think this is very important. We actually quite aware of the fact that there are already initiatives in the country that are designed to promote poetry, like WordPress, Tindina Poetry Project, Poetry Africa, Bala Writers Guild. All those initiatives, we have taken them on board because we know for a fact that there are so many people who are actually experienced here, who have got a lot of expertise. And some of these people are actually being used in terms of helping with the workshops that are going to be taking place in all the provinces. Also here, the logistics, I would like to really take your time on logistics, if you can move to the second slide. Of course, this is an area, as the Department of Arts and Culture, that we've always located within the provincial department. If you want people to come to your event, as a national department, you cannot achieve that without making it a point that the provincial department, the relevant municipalities, are the ones who play a leading role. And then also in terms of our marketing and communication strategy, we are targeting radio and television. So a marketing and communication strategy will incorporate interviews on radio and television. Also an outside broadcast. We'll broadcast the Heritage Day proceedings on 24 September 2007. This will be as a result of the partnership that we have already established with the SABC. Also, we'll be targeting the newspaper and other forms of entertainment. I would like to stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Also linked to this, there is a campaign we have started in the department and together with the National Library. And that is looking at publishing classics, republishing classics that are returning in indigenous languages. Because one of the challenges we've been finding is that publishers here at home do not want to publish books in indigenous languages because they say there is no market for that. And then it becomes a vicious circle. And because when people go to the bookstore, they cannot get it. And so we are trying to address the publication of in indigenous languages through this strategy. We will be publishing, looking at classics across the board, and we are starting with poetry, and we will be moving with novels as well, like, for example, Uno Chai Tiwam, which is the most romantic of the novels written by Kai Boyce. Really, it's absolutely wonderful novel. But also one of the things that we would like to begin the experiment is that there is a tendency that people want to translate from English to indigenous languages, but there is no cross-fertilization among the indigenous languages themselves that you can get an African highly translated into Tswana, and you can get another writer. So that there is a cross-fertilization amongst the aesthetic expressions of the indigenous languages. So it's something that is not going to be only focused for the month of September. It's something that we want to launch with the Heritage Month and this is a long-term a project. Ultimately, that project will be linked with our delivery on community libraries. And because we need to address the issue of content in the community libraries as well. When you go to the library, it's very difficult to pick up a book in indigenous language. And we hope through that we would then be able to activate some activity within the creative industries and in particular the publishing industry in the country. Thank you.
I'd like to talk for I missed the date of the launch.
The 8th of September.
You will get a CJ Fund make now. Okay. No, I'm looking at CJ Fund
The name terminated.
Yes, I wanted just to say that, in the interest of time, but there are so many people that are going to be involved, like this is first here in Cape Town, there's the machine as well, in terms of the conceptualization of this. But I just thought that it was kind of an oversight from my part, but there are women who are going to stay in this.
if I'm not mistaken, I'd like us to look at the agenda and look at the action effect because we can't take another input now. We can't record it now. So I want us to agree on the resumption of this condition or make our council board whether we put it in the next action. Will that be okay for the discussion? Because member of parliament, I don't have a problem with that. Because one meter, if we do them now, it's already right time. So could we then, say that next thing will be in the next agenda? Yes. So I'd like to thank the department and also all of the members for your time. And also I would like to say we've taken note of all the questions or challenges raised by the department. And when we visited Guatemala, all questions around the project, people were talking about money. They need more funds. There is much money to cover all the roads. One to one problems, but imagine if we go to land for this. How much money we need in the community to do the project. Not having enough money to do what you want to do in the project. But I also want to also thank you particularly for the effort that you as department were doing. You could see that the work on the central move now. I don't know whether
agree with me when you say, you know, the existence of, you know, efforts. And I would like to say we have lunch, and then we will get them, we'll sit down at a committee and look at a date, so that we have a prayer, get in it, so that we have the date. And because we want to also make sure that we will be going for the this is all by September. November will be busy. So I know that September is the heritage month, it will be very busy in the whole of September. I don't know whether we look at times in September or beginning of September. But you will get a letter because we will be busy. And then the lunch with the church must go to the department has been also invited to a branch of time. I would like to thank you for discussing the research and our lives. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.